one broadcast at a time.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
I'm Wiza Muntali, host of African Now, and you're tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
And welcome to Community Watch and Comment for Tuesday, June 17th. I'm Dave Rabin. Happy almost Juneteenth. I guess it's this Thursday. We have a good show for you, in my humble opinion. And on with the show. The U.S. military, in various shapes and forms, is a growing presence in our lives, I think we can safely say. Among various ventures, we're supporting Israel in its war with Iran. We might be getting in not just defensively, but now offensively. With Virginia Senator Tim Kaine attempting to invoke the long dormant War Powers Act, but that's a subject for another show. I mean, Congress is supposed to declare war. We shouldn't just have the executive, the president, getting us involved in these kind of conflicts, but there it is. Other examples of increasing military presence in our lives is the National Guard and the Marines on the streets of Los Angeles, and Trump's military just strutted its stuff down Constitution Ave here in D.C. And the Pentagon budget is increasing, while just about everything else in the federal government is shrinking. Put another way, the military-industrial congressional complex, which is the full term that Eisenhower wanted to use in describing it, and he got nixed by his advisors on the congressional part, but the military-industrial complex is alive and well, but its ability to recruit is not so well, putting increased pressure on programs like Junior Reserve Officers Training Corps, or JROTC, operating in more than 3,500 U.S. high schools. Trump's Project 2025 wants to increase military recruitment via the JROTC. Low-income and or people of color are and would be disproportionately affected, needless to say, as is always the case with the interface between the military and the U.S. population. And later in the show, we'll talk with Pat Elder, director of Military Poisons, and author of Military Recruiting in the U.S. But joining us now to talk about the JROTC is Rick Drankow, a former program coordinator for the Project on Youth and Non-Military Opportunities. He worked for 35 years as a counter-recruitment organizer. We're also joined by David Morales, educator and counter-recruitment activist. Gentlemen, welcome so much to Community Watch and Comment. It's great to have you.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
And we welcome callers, particularly if you have experienced JROTC as a student, a parent, or a teacher, but we want to hear from everybody. If you have any thoughts on this, we are very interested. We're all stakeholders. We're supporting this with our tax dollar at the least. Rick Jankow, what's your, shall we say, elevator speech on what the JROTC is? A lot of folks might not be familiar with it.
They also are probably not very familiar with what it actually does in our high schools.
Exactly.
The program started in 1916, and it has gradually expanded. And today it's in more than 3,400 high schools. Congress has authorized up to 4,000, but they haven't managed to reach that level yet. Basically, it's a military indoctrination program, and it's carried out in classrooms across the U.S. It's taught by retired military officers who are paid as employees of the schools. And while they claim its purpose is not recruiting, one of its stated purposes is to facilitate recruitment. And approximately 30 to 50% of the cadets who graduate from high school eventually join the military.
So, could you give that number again? Sometimes numbers go by us. What is that number again?
The military itself has stated that between 30 and 50% of the cadets who graduate from high school eventually wind up in the military.
So cadets that are, you know, in the JROTC program, and I imagine that's a far, far higher number than a student that's in the high school that doesn't participate in the program.
Yes, that's a much higher recruitment rate than the average population in high school. A minimum of 2 full-time instructors must be hired for any number of enrolled students up to 150. And then when it goes over 150, the contract and the agreement with the schools is that they're to try to hire an additional person. But realize that any number up to 150 means there could be only 60 students in the program, and they still have to hire 2 full-time instructors, which creates the kind of teacher-student ratio that is unheard of in the rest of the school. And the military provides a partial subsidy for the instructor salaries, only the salaries. No money is provided to cover the benefits that the schools have to offer in the same way they offer regular teachers benefits, and they cover things like workman's compensation and insurance, etc. Right now, as I mentioned, there are 34 high schools with the units, and that means that well over...
Wait a minute. 34,000, right?
3,400 high schools.
Excuse me.
But there are over 500,000 students total in the program.
Yeah.
So on any given day, over 500,000 students are sitting in the class at some time during the day.
And it's largely mandatory or no?
Well,
it's inconsistent, right?
It's not supposed to be mandatory. The military often says it's just a voluntary program, but in practice, there are many schools that wind up putting students in the program without their requesting it. In fact, there was an expose on that that was published by the New York Times, and it led to some congressional concern. So the military is now emphasizing that schools must have some method of ensuring that the students who are in it are there only voluntarily. But frankly, you know, what goes on between the counselor and the student when they're advising them on what classes to take, we know that students are still often put in the program because they're urged to do so, or in some cases automatically signed up by counselors.
Wow. I mean, it's kind of extraordinary. And there's the military, Army, Navy, Marines, et cetera, Air Force, they've got big recruitment problems, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's what the Army Reserve hasn't met its quota in something like 10 years. There are Navy vessels that are not being operated because there aren't enough sailors to operate them. If you could talk about the pressure, not just on the JROTC, but in general for the military to recruit.
Well, it's as you just said, they're having difficulty meeting quotas. And ironically, they're understaffed for the junior ROTC program. And this is before they've even reached that 4,000 goal of the number of high schools with the program, but they're having trouble in some cases hiring people in to actually be instructors in the schools. So I'm guessing that with some of the changes that have been made in the Department of Defense recently that are pretty hostile toward populations that in the past were considered critical to meeting recruitment quotas, you know, the way that they are shunning people of color, they're shunning gays and others under this assault on DEI programs, that I'm guessing that they're going to be having even more difficulty meeting their general quotas pretty soon. And then there's also the belligerent rhetoric towards other countries coming from the Trump administration, and we don't know, you know, if some of the high school students in JROTC in the coming years after they graduate won't wind up in Panama or Gaza or places like that, and that is going to create problems for the military to recruit.
You're saying that there's an actual shunning of people of color in the recruitment process because of Trump's attacks on DEI? That's shocking.
Yeah. Anything that was designed to encourage interest among people of color, those programs that the military had are being disbanded. And the same thing with women. Programs that were designed to encourage women to join the military, specifically those programs, are being cut as well.
I mean, it's kind of bizarre. You know, I'm a child of the Vietnam era, and, you know, remembering that what a disproportionate number of military in the Vietnam War machine were people of color. So it's kind of bizarre that now the Trump's attack on DEI is going against that grain.
And one of the other things that a lot of people are unaware of is that probably most of the schools with junior ROTC give the cadets the option of marksmanship training using high-powered lead pellet rifles and in shooting ranges inside the schools. And that might be something David can describe, because this is something that was encountered at his high school when he was in high school in San Diego.
Yeah, no, we want David to for sure talk about that. So just looking back on this last weekend's proceedings, I mean, the parade in part, I understand, was a recruitment advertisement, if you will. I mean, I didn't make it down there, although I actually would have I'd like to just to observe the bizarre spectacle. But, you know, you've got these robot dogs marching down Constitution Ave. It's just, with our tax dollar, what, $45 million, something like that, for this thing that apparently the president and his wife dozed off at one point. And the crowds were not particularly large. But, you know, the parade was a recruitment drive reflecting this whole pressure on JROTC to get fodder for the war machine, if you will. Anyway, and we've got this kind of behind the scenes, although Trump during the campaign denied any attachment to it. You've got this Project 2025 that's pressuring and pushing for greater recruitment. If you could touch on that, and then I want to go to David.
Well, the only thing that was real explicit about it was that the Project 2025 proposed that all high school students be required to take the military's entrance exam, which is called the ASVAB test. It's currently offered to schools at no cost to the school if they want to have their students take the test. but it's not mandatory. And in fact, there are some people who believe it's not even that effective. Recruiters themselves sometimes don't like to have the test given because they have to facilitate it being offered at schools. But that is one of the things that was explicit in Project 2025, was to make that mandatory, essentially a graduation requirement. It has not happened to that degree yet so far, but still it's lurking there.
And, it's lurking, yeah.
And also Project 2025 encouraged that recruiters be given greater access than they're currently given, which is hard to do because right now they're insured equal access to whatever is given to colleges and employers. And in fact, what they wind up getting is greater than equal access. So that was mostly rhetorical, but they are making it difficult for schools that are concerned about the welfare of their students when recruiters are wandering around free to basically go anywhere they want to go in schools. There are some schools, however, that have passed resolutions or policies that do limit military recruiters along with other recruiters. And that is about the only way they can put limits on what military recruiters at least are doing in their schools.
I mean, it's kind of bizarre. So you're saying that you can sit down for lunch in your normal high school in the United States and a recruiter might saddle up and say, hey, are you interested in this? Wow. I mean, it's kind of strange credulity for the likes of me, but I'm an old fart, if you will, and what do I know? But what I could really use is some input from our dear callers. This is Community Watch and Comment. We need your comments. 202-588-0893. We really want to hear from you. Let's move on to David Morales. Tell us about your experience encountering JROTC as a high school student in San Diego. What about 15, 16, 17 years ago? And how you reacted to that, if you would.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Dave, for having us on and addressing this important issue that I think we definitely need to address and reckon with and discuss during these times. As you mentioned, everything that is happening and just the increased presence of the military all around us. I mean, yeah, as you say, it's been a little while since I was in high school, 2006 to 2009. I graduated in 2009, but I fear that unfortunately not much has changed, and I bet that folks listening will resonate, particularly those who identify as people of color, grew up in working class neighborhoods, as was my case, growing up in San Diego, highly militarized city, county, region, and I attended a school that was predominantly student of color, working class, in a district that was pretty diverse. So, you know, in the same district, you had schools not too far from my school that were affluent, majority white, you know, student populations. So there was very clear segregation, you know, even then in a diverse sort of city and county. But in any case, in my school, again, that was primarily working class, student of color. At some point during my high school trajectory, a new principal, we got a new principal who was actually very pro-military and a veteran. And she ended up getting rid of college-oriented programs and courses. So, for example, she got rid of an AVID program, a program across the country that really helps first generation students sort of access the hidden curriculum of college, right? Helps us get into college. And I was part of the program. She got rid of the AVID program. She got rid of advanced placement courses, AP courses. And instead, instead of, she brought in JROTC. So that was my introduction to JROTC. As a new program, a new class that this principal was bringing in to replace AVID and to replace these college-oriented courses. So I remember at the time feeling confused, feeling like, well, you know, and being actually personally affected, like why, you know, this class that I was in that was sort of helping me, you know, figure out college and how to apply to college is no longer going to be available. This AP class that I was going to take, I can no longer take it. And instead, we would show up first day of class, my friends and I, first day of, it must have been 10th grade, first day of the semester, where they hand you your schedule. And we had JROTC on our schedule. And we're like, what is this? You know, and why were we placed in this course? We never asked for this course. And you know, some of us had luck getting out of it. I was one of the students who fortunately was able to talk with the counselor and switch out of it. And I had friends who were told, you know, friends who grew up in my neighborhood who were just like me and who grew up, who were told that there was no more space in other classes in their English, 10th grade English class, which is a requirement to graduate, that there was no more space in PE, that there was no more space in other classes, that they needed to stay in JROTC for at least this coming semester, this coming term.
Wow. Wow.
And then I had classmates, like I had a friend who went through this experience where she got placed in JROTC multiple times, like three times, where she asked to get out, she would get out, and then the next semester she would end up back in JROTC. So, you know, Rick was talking about how, you know, technically this is a voluntary program, like no student, you know, and it goes against California education code to place students involuntarily in this program. And yet you had counselors placing, and I want to stress this, a specific population of students in JROTC, right? Because then you had in the remaining, you know, academically advanced courses in the school that remained in my school, they were primarily white students, right? More affluent students. So you had a very clear segregation, and it was very clear to us. And that's sort of what started the work that we did, the campaigns that we led against, you know, the very predatory militarism in our school, that we started to realize, wait, what is happening? Why is it that, you know, La Jolla High School, a high school just a few miles north of our high school, where the community is much more affluent and wealthy, they don't have JROTC. They don't have military recruiters wandering their campus at all times. Why? Because parents would flip. They would flip. Meanwhile, in our school, we had military recruiters pulling up during lunchtime with their pull-up bars and soliciting personal information from us. You know, do some pull-ups. Wait, before you do this pull-up competition, you got to fill out this paper and hand over your phone number. You know, and then we would get harassed. We would get harassed by these recruiters throughout the day, throughout the weeks. They would call us and just really harass us, right?
There any reaction from parents, from teachers? I mean this is really quite bizarre. I don't think, I mean, you know, I'm in a cocoon of sorts in D.C. in my experience, but I mean, was there reaction from parents, from teachers to this targeting clearly of, you know, people of color, students of color at your school?
Yes, yeah, so that's an interesting question. And I think you were sharing before, David, and I can't remember now if it was before the show, but you know, how you weren't aware of this ROTC program at this high school that you frequent. I think it's similar in the sense that, well, one, we have to remember that San Diego, and you know, there's many other cities like San Diego, perhaps not militarized to the extent that San Diego is, but militarism is generally often goes under the radar because it's so pervasive, it's so ingrained and so part of, like, you know, what the U.S. is and the fabric of the U.S. So one, you can imagine how teachers just saw it as like, okay, it's a great, cool. You know, we live in San Diego and this is a, and, you know, JROTC, one, loves to claim that it's not a recruitment program, and two, loves to claim that it's a leadership instilling program, and you know, and that it helps with discipline, you know, discipline students. And so you can imagine how teachers, many teachers, most teachers viewed it as something positive. And then you might imagine how parents, particularly, you know, working class parents like my parents, who like had to work all day and couldn't stay on top of, you know, the situation, all the changes that are happening at my school, just didn't know about it. And this was the same with the shooting ranges. So like, as Rick mentioned, part of this JROTC program at my school was the fact that they had marksmanship training. So they were teaching kids, they were teaching my classmates. Again, I was fortunate to exit the program, to not be placed in it, or not step foot in it, but they were teaching students how to shoot rifles. What's most sinister about this, Dave, is that, so I mentioned this AVID program, right, where they were, you know, they would help us with college applications, or, you know, the classes that you need to take to be eligible to apply to college. Well, they got rid of the program, and where those classes stood, like, I remember the AVID classrooms, right, it was like this bungalow building. Well, they knocked down the wall between two classrooms, two AVID classrooms, and that is where they installed this shooting range. So it was like symbolic as well. Like, what message are they trying to tell us? You know,
I read somewhere that the Parkland shooter that what gunned down 18 students in Parkland, Florida. I mean, yeah. he was trained. Yeah, the shooting in the JROTC. And I should say, we've got a caller, and I really appreciate you calling. Let me just finish this part of the interview with David, and then we'll go to you. I appreciate you calling. Please hold on. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, so yes, the parents, the community, largely, they didn't know. But there were a few teachers, and there was one teacher in particular, Mr. Luis Villanueva, my Spanish teacher, who, along with the help of Project Llano, the Project on Youth and Non-Military Opportunities, which is the organization that Rick and I belong to, that I joined at that time and continue to be a part of, you know, with the help of Project Llano, with the help of my one teacher, and started to think critically about what was happening in our school. Like, why is it that we are being targeted? And we started to organize, we started to mobilize. And when we got around to informing the parents, our parents, the community, that there was a shooting range, you know, at the school, at the same school where there's a zero tolerance policy, they flipped out. They were like, there's no way, I can't believe it. Because people should react that way. You know, like, that is, people should react like it. But the thing is that oftentimes, like, it's not publicized as something that right. is there. So, you know, so, right. but yeah, people flipped out, and, you know, parents, our parents, you know, our community, our parents, and then the students that we were able to talk to and kind of educate politically about the broader kind of message and like what's happening here. Because of this work, we were able to mobilize and organize against the involuntary placement of students in JROTC. Counselors were also falsely telling students that JROTC would help them towards college. And that's not true, right? That's not true. And then and the weapons training, we're like, how is it possible that this school district has a zero tolerance policy where students are being expelled for bringing weapons? You know, of course, there should be no weapons in schools. How is it possible that, you know, a school that serves a community where there is gun violence is teaching kids how to shoot guns? Like, what kind of message is that sending, right? And so we are able to rally around those points and mobilize to the school district. We were at school board meetings. We're meeting with board members. I remember during my time off as a student, I would go to other schools to talk to other students. About what was happening at their schools with their JROTC program, right? So we wanted to address this not only in our specific school campus, but across the district. And my senior year, 2009, February 10th, we mobilized. Like, we had hundreds of students at the school board offices, and we, the board, because of our work and our campaign and the pressure that we put on them and the parents that came out, voted to eliminate marksmanship training from all of San Diego Unified Schools. So that has held even to this day. San Diego Unified School District does not have marksmanship training in their JROTC program. And we've managed we've managed other victories. Like, we managed that eventually as well to restrict the number of times military recruiters can make to school campuses, whereas before they were there all the time. And they would, you know, engage students in any way that they wanted to. And we were able to set some limits or terms and regulations in terms of how they can engage with students, right? And the number of visits that they can make to twice a year, which is already a significant gain.
Wonderful.
And then we were also able to establish a college going curriculum as the default graduation curriculum to ensure that all students, by the time they graduate, are eligible at least to apply to higher education, to the college system in California, because that wasn't the case before, right? Like, students wow. could literally reach graduation, high school graduation, and find out that they couldn't apply to college or university because they didn't take the right classes. So that was going
it
on.
It sounds like the upside of these, the JROTC, it turned you into a conscious activist. We're running out of time, and I want to get to our callers. So appreciate you checking in. Are you still with us? Your name, if you care to, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Thanks for checking in.
About 15 years ago, I was at a conference, and Ralph Nader was given a presentation. He related a story about a reporter asking you what disappointed him most about the United States. Can you hear me?
It's a little, you're breaking up a little bit. If you could make it short and sweet, because we're running out of time.
Well, but basically, Ralph Nader was relating a story about what Eugene Debs said was the most disappointing thing about the United States. And he said that Americans can have anything they want, but they ask for so little. I had a draft number when I was growing up. I was born in 1955. So I had a draft number going into the Vietnam War. And I had made a decision that I wasn't going to go. So the United States doesn't have it has a draft, but it's not active. And one thing that they learned was that you will politicize a whole lot of young people if you give them a number and say, we can send you anywhere in the world and die. And this will only end when enough people say we have enough. But apparently not enough people have had enough. And so all of this stuff continues because the American people accept it. And that was basically what Eugene Debs said, that we accept the worst, apparently, because we're not willing to work with the best.
Yeah. We're just about out of time. Any thoughts on this, David and or Rick?
What David mentioned, the organization that we work with, Project on Youth and Non-Military Opportunities. And so if people want more information, not just on junior ROTC, but also on doing counter recruitment in schools, they should go to our website, which is Project Yano, that's YANO.org. And you'll find resources there if that's something you're interested in doing. Unfortunately, there hasn't been this kind of organizing in DC for some time. And I think your other guest who hasn't come on yet, but there are groups around the country. They're a smaller number than there were, say, 15 years ago, but it's possible to wage this kind of campaign, this kind of organizing project, and have an impact. So I want to encourage people to maybe visit our website. Again, it's projectyano.org.
Great. And what do you all say in conclusion here to those that say, hey, there's a lot of good things about a program like the JROTC? It provides structure, discipline, work opportunities down the line, if you will. And most of the country see military service as a good thing, as a patriotic thing. Hey, what's the problem here? You're just acting like old lefties and criticizing the military, and aren't you kind of like creating a problem where there really isn't one? I'm being the devil's advocate here. Your thoughts?
Yeah, we hear that a lot. So it's a very real comments there in your devil advocacy. But no, I mean, when it comes to like the argument of leadership and discipline, there's so many other ways to and other programs and other kinds of activities that students can involve in themselves that build leadership and discipline that have nothing to do with war and violence and destruction, right? That are more oriented towards peace and justice. So I also think it's important to listen to veterans, and that's something that we do with Project Yano. We work with veterans who have served, who have their own experiences, and who can speak firsthand about what their experiences were during service, and listening to veterans and their stories is key to understanding why it is that we promote alternatives to militarism. If students want to, or young people, or the public wants to, at the very least, right, if they want to engage in marksmanship training, if they're interested in the military, like, okay, but does it have to be in school? Does it have to take the place of courses and programs and college oriented programs that instill critical thinking? Like, we think not. So yeah, that's what we would say.
We're going to have to end it there. Unfortunately, I could have you on for a couple hours. Thank you both so much for joining us today here on Community Watch and Comment. I've been speaking with Rick Jankow, former program coordinator for the Project on Youth and Non-Military Opportunities, and David Morales, educator and counter recruitment activist, and soon we're going to be able to call him Dr. Morales. He's about to finish his PhD at Stanford. Congratulations, sir, and thank you so much for all you're doing, and thank you for joining us today, gentlemen.
Thank you, David.
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate
Thanks
it. Thanks so much. And on to our last guest. We've got someone relatively local, or quite local here, Pat Elder, Director of Military Poisons and author of Military Recruiting in the U.S. Pat Elder was active with the D.C. Anti-War Network of the National Coalition to Protect Student Privacy and the National Network Opposing the Militarization of Youth in the early 2000s. He helped organize many protests at U.S. military recruiting stations in the D.C. metropolitan area. Pat Elder, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, David. I appreciate you inviting me to show up here.
Yeah, it's you were not easy to find, although I realized that you were on some listservs that I had. There's just this extraordinary absence, it seems to me, and from everyone I could speak with, about that there's a lack of counter recruitment activity here in the DC area, which is just, as I said, rather astonishing to me. If you could talk about that and where you see things going.
Sure. Well, first, I'd like to point out that, you know, Rick Joncal and David Morales have certainly kept the flame going nationally, as well as Gary Girardi. And Gary, I believe, also works with David and Rick with the national network opposing the militarization of youth. That's NOMI. So by no means is, you know, resistance fading nationally. But I'd have to say you're right. You know, in the district and in Maryland and Virginia, we see largely a disappearance of resistance to recruiting. And you know, I knew John Judge really well, and I know Rick knew John well as and John actually got me going. You know, he brought me into Ballou High School. And he brought me into Cardoza High School in the district. And he taught me quite a bit about how the JROTC programs work. And we should realize, too, that the military has other programs in the nation's high schools and in the district in Maryland and Virginia. You know, but it's how important it is to get into the schools and to talk to these high school kids and to, you know, give them the notion that although, you know, the military will claim they're all about instilling values and leadership programs, they really do repress individual thinking. And I think that's important too. And I can speak somewhat on the curriculum. I've read all four of their, you know, JROTC textbooks. People don't seem to understand that it's more than just, you know, marching around on the football field. Go ahead, David.
Pat, I don't know if you can change your location if you're on your cell phone. You're breaking up on me.
Okay, how about now? Is that any better?
Well, it is for the moment. I'm hearing from our engineer. What do you think, Mr. Mike?
Yeah, right. You just broke up.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah, and I didn't have my...
So maybe maybe I'm going to switch off of my Wi-Fi. Maybe I'm the problem. Okay, just hold on one second here.
Sure.
Get off of, get up to the data. If you're not part of this solution, you're part of the problem. So Pat, how did you get involved with this whole thing in the first place with, you know, being aware of this JROTC and getting involved with the counter recruitment efforts?
Well, I've been a central part of anti-war activism in the district for close to 40 years. And, you know, when the wars du jour would rear their ugly heads, I would organize with you know, either the DC Anti-War Network or United for Peace and Justice or ANSWER or whoever it might be. And the idea has been for quite a while, since the first Iraq War, to try to put as many people as possible on the street. We did that. I think, you know, during the Iraq War in 2003, we managed to get hundreds of thousands of people on the street. I mean, it didn't change policy. So I've always thought of myself as being, you know, at least try to be pragmatic. And I saw that Rick Joncal in San Diego was doing stellar work countering recruitment. And, you know, these were different times, David. You know, it was 03, 04, 05. Things were hot. We would, you know, put messages on email listservs and get 150, 200 people at a recruitment station in the district or in suburban Maryland with a week's notice. You know, people saw
that this was important work. And but it was a different time, and that light kind of faded. And increasingly, we saw less and less people interested. And at the same time, I was in HEC in Germany speaking on the lead ammunition and how the lead ammunition was known to get onto the cafeteria tables. And the scientists would swab the cafeteria tables to determine dangerous levels, probably not the best public policy. And so I was speaking about that in Germany, and this was in 2017. And Pat Hines at the time was had just left a position at the EPA, and she spoke about burn pits and PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. So getting back to the idea of being pragmatic, you know, I moved from, you know, trying to put people on the street to countering recruitment to military poison. So for me, it's been that. But quite frankly, it's been, heck, 8 or 9 years since I've been directly involved. I wrote a book, as you alluded to earlier, Military Recruiting in the United States, that was published in 2016. I laid it down. It was right after, you know, I'd worked with Jamie Raskin, who at that time was a member of the Maryland Senate, and Jamie lived close to me. I wrote two bills in rudimentary form. You know how these constitutional lawyers are. They can turn it into language, you know, for the General Assembly in Maryland. One had to do with the opt-out program, and that had to do with creating a form that all parents in the state of Maryland have to sign in order for information regarding their child to be sent to military recruiters. So it's the idea that parents have the right to opt out, and we passed that law in Maryland. Managed to get it passed a couple other states, but that kind of died as well. I also worked with Jamie Raskin and others on a bill that required parental consent for their children to vocational aptitude battery. Heck, I lived in Bethesda. My children attended Walt Whitman, and military recruiters would never go there. But just 5-6 miles away, you know, in more challenged circumstances, you know, with higher levels of minorities and lower income levels, you know, the ASVAB program was prevalent. But we managed to get a couple bills passed. A third bill I worked on had to do with eliminating lead ammunition in the public schools in Maryland. We didn't call out the military. We knew better. So I just wrote the idea that lead ammunition should not be allowed in extracurricular activities in Maryland public schools. Yeah. And we got 33 members of the House of Delegates to sign on, but we couldn't get the Democratic leadership. So it died. And that at that point, you know, I just had, you know, left that conference in Germany, and it just hit me, you know, if I can't get legislation passed in my own state, which is a darned heavy blue state, and I know Rick always would point that out, and David would point that, or Rick would, and I couldn't, you know, I was defeated there. So, and not just me, I mean, there was a group of 20 or 30 of us, and we really lobbied the General Assembly, and we weren't able to get it passed. So that told me it's time to move on. So that's why, you know, I switched gears into, you know, combating militarism. There's a couple other points here I want to make, and I think it's really important, having to do with the what's taught in the textbooks. JROTC is a 4-year program, and these textbooks rival you know, the U.S. history textbooks. So, you know, there's the LET program, which is Leadership, Education, and Training. And there's LET 1, 2, 3, and 4. And these are 300 and 400 page textbooks. And they are taught. And but just a couple things, you know, that students ought to know. For instance, the entire unit on civics is entitled You the People. Well, you know, it last time I checked it, it's we the people. But you get the idea here. They're not teaching, creative thought. They're teaching discipline and to follow orders. In the LAT text, it says that 1 million American lives were saved because we dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We know that's not true. The Mexican-American War was a war that was fought justly. It was a war that was supposed to happen, and you have to read the text in order to see it. Gulf of Tonkin, it does not tell the truth about the Gulf of Tonkin.
Gulf of Tonkin was the resolution in 1964 that Johnson pushed President Johnson put the guys involved in Vietnam.
Yeah, that's right. So I think also, I was a high school teacher for a short spin. And so I had a master's degree in education in order to be able to continue to teach, you know. But the JROTC instructors are only required to have AA degrees. And so they're allowed to teach. And in the meantime, you know, we would all have to take 6 hours of continuing education classes yearly. So we would be learning things about disabilities and reading disabilities and problems with, you know, students on, you know, the spectrum, but not the JROTC, you know, folks. And they would
Pat, we are running out of time.
That's okay.
Just a couple of minutes left. What do you recommend for someone in our listening audience that might be interested in get involved in this effort? It's dormant at the moment, and I think we can say in the DC area. What would you recommend for anyone that might be interested in getting involved in this counter recruitment work?
Yeah, first I would go to militarypoisons.org, and I would click up top where it says Pat's articles in the news, and find my book. My book is Military Recruiting in the United States, and it offers a primer. And then I would reach out to Rick and David, the folks you just had, to get an idea of what specifically can be done. I think in the state of Maryland and in the district, in the state of Maryland, let's make sure that some of the more right-wing red counties are actually following the letter of the law regarding ASVAB testing. That test should never be given. There were times where kids had to take it, especially in heavily minority schools. So we have to make sure that the two laws that are passed in Maryland, you know, are being enforced. And then in the district, that kind of work had never been done. So I would advise that in the district, people become aware that information is leaving the schools about children from files to recruiters without parents knowing anything about it, and that the ASVAB test is being given without parents knowing anything about it. I think that's important, and that's the lowest lying fruit. I'd get angry first, and then I'd learn it.
Yeah, and we should say, you know, these JROTC Army and Navy programs are all around the greater DC area. I mean, we're talking about Cardozo High School here in DC, Coolidge High School, Dunbar, Eastern High School, McKinley, Ron Brown College Prep High School, Roosevelt High School, three blocks from me, Columbia Heights Education Campus, H.D. Woodson High School. I mean, it's all over, I go swimming at Roosevelt, and my goodness, there's an ROTC program.
Yeah,
we have to end it there. We're going to have to get you back. This is so important. I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank you for all you are and have been doing. I've been speaking with Pat Elder, Director of Military Poisons and author of Military Recruiting in the U.S. Thank you so much for being with us.
You bet. Thank you. Appreciate
it. Okay, and that's going to do it for our show. Thanks to the amazing Mike Nasella for his engineering expertise, and special thanks to Sylvia McCauley. I am probably mispronouncing McCauley, for help producing the show. She's the reason, in large part, that you are hearing the voices you hear, you heard today. Thank you so much, Sylvia. Coming up, Don't Forget the Blues with Lady Murr. Also coming up this Sunday, WPFW is holding its Jazz and Justice Festival in Malcolm X Park, noon till 9, rain or shine. Festival will include live music, poetry, social justice, teach-ins, visual arts, and children's activities. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Dave Rabin. Stay safe and have a great week.
WPFW, in collaboration with the Josephine Butler Center, present the Jazz and Justice Festival, Sunday, June 22nd, noon until 8 p.m. An activation of music, poetry, social justice teach-ins, visual art, wellness, children's activities, and more in Malcolm X Park. WPFW personalities Saiz Kamaluddin, Kaaba Soul Singer, and Proverbs Reggae Band will be among the performers, with sets by DJ Lance Reynolds and Underdog. Also featured will be an art show curated by Adrian Ferguson of The Art of Noise and a community curated by Milani Douglas. Stay tuned to WPFW for updates and details.
This is Rev Yearwood, and I am so excited to announce our new climate show, Think 100% Climate Friday. This show will keep you up to date on everything climate justice related in a rapidly changing world. We will discuss breaking news and updates on environmental issues, the climate crisis, COVID-19, and politics. This show will make tangible how the climate crisis is already impacting our lives and what you can do about it. So tune in every Friday at 9 o'clock a.m. right here on WPFW 89.3, your jazz and justice station.
Peace, family. On Sunday, June 22nd, at WPFW's Jazz and Justice Festival at Malcolm X Park, WPFW invites community filmmakers to join the music. During the festival, in the Josephine Butler Park Center next to Malcolm X Park, WPFW will host a community film showcase celebrating liberatory stories of resistance, resilience, and rhythm. Short works, 12 minutes or less, whether first-time experiments or seasoned productions, will be welcomed for submission at films@wpfw.org. Submissions will remain open through midnight, Wednesday, June 18th. Technical polish is secondary to vision, heart, and voice. This is an open call, and there is space for every perspective that fits under the 12-minute time limitation and reflects our community's values. Once more, the submission email address is films@wpfw.org. WPFW, making the world a better place, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. This is Papa Wabe inviting you to check out my new showgram, Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, every Thursday morning from 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We present a mashup of positive, uplifting music of different genres, mainly roots reggae. We also feature poetry, speeches, artist interviews, and so much more. That's Free Your Mind with Papa Wabe, Thursday mornings, 2 to 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on WPFW 89.3 FM, making it a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Free your mind!
Greetings, WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle.
If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at wpfwfm.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at wpfwfm.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world one broadcast at a time.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective.